Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Spectres! Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm Tom, your host, with Sam, our topic expert. And Sam, I hear, the show notes say that we're talking about somebody named Liara?
You may have heard her name before.
Oh, yeah, Liara.
She's kind of a big deal.
Oh, yes, she is kind of a big deal. Yeah, welcome back, everybody. We had our patron chat last week. The week before that, we had to take off. Things have been a little bit busy for both me and Sam over the last few weeks, but we're back, and we've got more Liara to talk about. And this, Sam, these are some of my favorites, because you've read through the comics and the novels and things like that. I've played the game, so every time we talk about the comics and novels, like, I would assume many of our listeners, this is fun for me, because I get to dive into the comics and learn some things that I just definitely didn't experience because I haven't read them. Plus, we've got some visuals on screen for people as we go through these. But this is a lot of fun. I'm excited to get into this. So we're talking about Liara some more from the comics?
Yeah, the Mass Effect Homeworld comic, to be specific. Some of our listeners may have remembered our episodes in the past when we talked about Garrus's Homeworld comic or Tally's Homeworld comic. You know, these are a series of Mass Effect stories told through short comics, one each focusing on one character. And today we're talking about Liara's Homeworld comic because it bridges that gap of what was Liara doing between Mass Effect 2, when we left her as Shadow Broker, to the beginning of Mass Effect 3, when we meet her on Mars. So this is like that perfect bridge, as we so often see in these comics. They're filling in the little narrative gaps between the games.
Yeah.
And man, the opening cover artwork here, it just struck me, unlike any of the others. This one is just fantastic. Like we can pull this up on screen.
Yeah, it's up on screen here. This artwork is great. Like, you've got, it's like electric looking Liara, right? You've got like this like power just coming out of her arms as she's like turning and looking at something in the distance, you know, probably ready to zap it or whatever. This is cool stuff. So we're at the period between the games again. So this is after she becomes Shadow Broker, right?
Yeah, it is. It's before the start of Mass Effect 3. So we start the comic with somewhat of an identity crisis for Liara. You know, she's standing at the Shadow Broker's wall of screens on this ship floating above Hagalaz, the planet Haagen-Dazs, well known for its
ice cream planet. Yep.
And she's telling us, you know, she's monologuing, and she's telling us, the reader, that she's been pursuing knowledge her whole life, but now she's got this fire hose of information, this unlimited access, and she has more data than she knows what to do with, and she's paralyzed with indecision. She has no clue what to do with all of this. She has a massive task in her mind, which is, you know, how do I use all of this data to stop the Reaper invasion, or at least to make it not so bad? And that is like an enormous objective.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a wealth of information, but like, it's too much. Like, I totally get that. Like, can you imagine just stepping into the role of Shadow Broker and just being like, okay, what do I do now? Like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's like you were working as a highly specialized role in your company, and then all of a sudden another larger company, you became CEO of.
Right.
And your task
didn't have anyone there to be like, oh, here's how all of this works. Here's what you need to know. It's more of just like, okay, now you figure it out yourself. Good luck.
Right. You killed the previous CEO.
Right. And it's not like the secretaries sitting around like, okay, let me walk you through some of the stuff you should be aware of, you know, like.
Right. And no one knows. It's almost like you assumed the, like, you're wearing the skin of the previous CEO and no one can know that you are not the previous CEO. And so now, and also, by the way, your company's task is to save the economy.
Right. Yeah. Like, everybody's depending on you. Good luck. And yeah, you feel like, a total imposter. Yeah, this is a really good premise. This makes a lot of sense for how anybody would feel walking into this role.
Yeah. And then she reveals a little bit more of why she became the Shadow Broker. She says that, you know, we'll need everything we can get to defeat the Reapers. And she wanted to give her allies, specifically her allies, she wanted to give them the advantage that they need. And it turns out one of those allies that she has been working closely with is Admiral Hackett.
Nice. And we got some more images here to put up on the screen. This artwork is pretty good, although she does have some very serious face things going on here. Like, there's
yeah, I noticed that there was like this significant kind of I don't know, shift away from the cover artwork toward the artwork inside, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's right. We've talked about this in some of the previous episodes when we talked about the comics, and it feels like the hero panels or like the cover panel feels like it's given a lot of time, but then a lot of the work on the inside feels a little rushed, a little like, is this really what Liara looks like? I guess.
You know what tickles me about this whole thing, though? So the panel that we're looking at is Liara standing in front of a terminal and a hologram version of Admiral Hackett is talking to her. So I'd like to imagine that this is while Shepard is incarcerated for his actions in the Arrival DLC, you know, blowing up that planet, all the Batarians died. Yeah. Shepard is out of order, right? And meanwhile, Hackett's like, I need someone who I can bother to go do my busy work because I can't patch into the Normandy and say, hey, Shepard, I have another quest for you. So Now he's bugging Liara. Now he's calling Liara and be like, hey, he's like the grandfather that's lonely and he needs someone to call, you know?
Right. But I just need to go to the store for something. You don't really need any store. You're going just because you want to talk to another human being, aren't you? Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess. All right. So they're talking back and forth. And Liara is basically telling him our best hope lies with the Protheans. You know, I'm not willing to give up on this avenue yet, even though we've explored this avenue before. The Protheans had a weapon of some kind, even if it failed. You know, if that's the case, then we can use it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to Thessia. Maybe there's something that we can glean from the archives. And the really interesting thing is, right after those panels, look who's watching that conversation unfold.
Yeah, Tim. You got Tim down here.
Martin
at the bottom.
Sheen. We have Martin Sheen watching this all happen.
That makes me feel way, way differently about the actor when we say the actor rather than the character. I'm like, oh, Martin Sheen, that son of a bitch. But I don't really have any strong opinions about Martin Sheen other than like, yeah, he's pretty good in movies, I guess.
That sly son of a bitch, Martin Sheen, is up to no good yet again. So the two agree that Liara is going to pursue that knowledge about the Protheans on Thessia, and that's where Liara goes. And she's being led into these top secret archives on Thessia, the Asari homeworld, by another Asari, Dr. Passante, who is apparently an old family friend.
Okay. Wait, all right. I don't know what to say about that.
Right. Well, this name should be new to you, Dr. Passante. If you're listening and you're like, who is Dr. Passante and why is that name so fun to say? Hold on. I'm going to give a little brief moment because I know a lot of people listen to this in their cars. Take a second, pause this show and say Dr. Passante and tell me that isn't an extremely fun name to say.
Dr. Passante. I feel like it's one of those words that should have a definition in a Latin speaking language, like French or Spanish or you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Oh, wait. I just Googled it. What is the meaning of passante? Noun, passerby, a person who is going past a place when something happens. Is that
almost like a passante character?
Huh. Passante character.
So this kind of is a great segue. This is why you may not have heard her name before, because she was never in the series before this. And yet she has this very important role. She's new to Homeworld comic, and she apparently knew Liara's mom, Matriarch Benezia, and they being Liara and Passante, had some kind of past collegial relationship. So Liara says, "It's good to see you again," and Passante goes, "I've missed you. Though when you contacted me, I have to admit, I was hoping you wanted to talk about returning to Thessia for good, I mean. You're a wonderful teacher, and we could use you here." I might be reading a little too much into this, but when I read, "I've missed you, though when you contacted me, I have to admit, I was hoping you wanted to talk about returning to Thessia for good, I mean."
Uh-huh.
It kind of sounds like the language a lover would use, right?
Right.
Not just a colleague.
Right. Yeah, like this was a past relationship and somebody you left and you both understood, we need to part ways, I have other things I need to go do, and that was just not the right time for us. Like that kind of thing. And then you get a call back from that person, and you're like, oh, maybe they're coming back. Maybe not.
Yeah, okay. Or maybe this was an unrequited love situation. I don't know.
Maybe.
But
yeah. Or, Liara, I mean, you could say it may also just be a good friend. Like a good friend would want you to come back.
Like
right?
A family friend. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So Liara admits that she's fantasized about, you know, just saying, screw it all, I'm going back home.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, anyway, that's a passing fancy, a passante fancy.
A passante fantasy. Passante fantasy coming to a stage
that
near
sounds
you.
That sounds like a perfume.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay. Like, I was thinking like one of those like weird shows that you would see in Vegas. Like Passante fantasy. Only for adults. But it's like mildly only for adults.
It's very softcore.
right?
So I was thinking Passante fantasy. Like, have you ever seen those like Bleu de Chanel ads?
Uh-huh, right,
you know,
right.
Like,
right.
But you have like an Asari coming out of the water and her hair tentacles are back as they always are. But
right, right. Yeah,
the water is dripping over.
It's the elusive man, but he's a merman also for some reason.
Yes, and they're leering at each other underwater.
Right, right. In slow motion. With like beams of light, you know, shining through the
And then they're embracing, but then both of them have like a knife behind their back, and it says "Passante fantasy."
Passante fantasy, more than you expected.
What? And you're like, what? This is a perfume?
What?
That's how every one of those perfume ads goes. But anyway,
yeah.
Passante, she ends up showing Liara this Prothean data in the Thessia archives, and then she tries to ask Liara why she wants this data in the first place. Big surprise, Liara is being secretive. And she's telling Liara, look, you know, I've been hearing some rumors that you've been trading secrets and you're like, you know, in this sketchy situation where you're dealing with Cerberus. And clearly that doesn't make Passante feel good. Liara gets defensive, you know, and she asks if Passante really thinks that she only wants this Prothean information only for profit. And then Passante counters and says, an excellent point, telling Liara, look, your mom meant well, but Benezia's passions, they consumed her. So whatever it is that you're after, I watched Matriarch Benezia follow this same path that you're walking right now, and it led her to doom.
Dun, dun, dun. Don't grow up to be your mom.
Pretty much, yeah. I feel like we've seen this exact line of dialogue in Star Wars before.
Right, yeah. We talk about some of the Star Wars similarities in Mass Effect. But also, just in general, I think it's one of those like ancient tropes of like the sins of the father, or, you know, like don't grow up and feel like you're going to be your parents, or just because your parents messed up doesn't mean that it has to affect you for the rest of your life. Like that kind of thing, right? That feels like a very common trope.
Yeah, yeah, it's and it's a very convenient way to introduce some background to the lore to make it feel more real. That not only do we have Liara and her mom now, but we also have this third party that knew both of them, mm-hmm. must have known Liara while she was growing up, and it adds a depth to Liara's character in a very concise way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It just feels convenient, like a little bit like a convenient writing trope. But then again, if you are reading through this comic and you're a fan of Liara, then you would expect there's going to be some reference, especially with somebody she's known a long time, to her mother and some of the things that are going on in her history and those kinds of things. Like, that's who the character is at this point. So,
and that's kind of the point of these homeworld comics, to develop these individual characters a little bit more.
Right.
So Passante reluctantly tells Liara, look, you know what? You're not going to find what you're looking for here. You need to go to Kage. And Kage might sound familiar to a lot of people. If you don't know why, it's because it's the Hanar homeworld. Okay. So there are these massive Prothean ruins there, the size of cities. The Hanar, of course, worship the Protheans, calling them the Enkindlers. And so it's like, oh, you know what? Now we're off on another adventure. So off Liara goes to Mass Effect's Waterworld, because every sci-fi series has one.
Right, right.
And yeah. It's the, you know, home of the big stupid jellyfish. So this is really, really cool. And it's the only depiction that we get in the entire series of literally seeing, like, visual depiction of what life is like on Kage.
Yeah, that's cool. And we're going to get to that after the mid-break. We have to go thank our patrons, but it's coming up. Don't worry. We will give you some insight into Kage, which sounds like it should also mean something else. I don't know. There's something about the word Kage that just, I don't know.
I bet it's like, what is it called when a word is, the letters are rearranged? Is that an acronym? I don't know. And what is that called?
No, I don't know what that's called. I'm sure somebody in our chat knows, but yeah, someone knows. Like the words, like the letters were something else and they got moved around.
Right.
I don't know. All right. Well, let's go thank our patrons. We'll be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. We have to shout out our patrons, including our newest patron, Piscine Nevermore. Passante Nevermore. Piscines Nevermore. I think that's how it's pronounced. Welcome to the Patreon, as I stumble over names, which I always do. Thank you for joining us. And I have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Ticino, and William. Thank you so much for your support. And to all 67 of our current active patrons and everyone who's supported the show in the past and everyone who's thought about supporting the show and all of your mothers. Thank you so much for all of you. It's not Mother's Day, but it's almost Father's Day, actually. To all of your dads, thanks so much for being here. If you are interested in helping us out and getting some cool stuff, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast to check everything out. Also, you can help us out with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, which we'll read out on a future episode of the show, like this one from Rednicks in Slovakia. Very cool. I love.
Whoa, I did not know we had a single listener in Slovakia.
We have listeners in many different countries, and it's really cool to hear from you, especially when you take the time to leave a nice review like this one. So thank you so much. This is what the review says. Review from introvert and phlegmatic winky face. Amazing show. I have thousands of hours across PC, PS3, 4, and 5, and know almost every bit of lore and still enjoy your show because it's awesome to listen to other people's opinions on not only lore, but everything related to Mass Effect, especially loving episodes with people who participated in the development of the game. Keep up the amazing work, Keila Salai. Oh, thanks so much. I'm so glad that you're enjoying it. And wow, found another super fan from Slovakia, which is really cool. If you'd like to help us out, please leave a 5-star review or leave a 5-star review on Spotify or whatever platform you're listening to this on, or share the show with your friends. All of that is extremely helpful. All right, let's get back to... Oh, wait. Planet card?
Yeah, but wait, there's more. But we have a planet card.
It's planet card time again. Guess which planet card we're doing. Anybody? Anyone want to guess?
It's got water.
There's a lot of jellyfish. There's a lot of water involved.
A lot of perfume.
This is the setting for the perfume merman perfume merman Tim perfume. This is a new shirt we're designing right here.
I would buy that perfume.
Mer Tim. Tim the merman.
The elusive merman.
There you go. That's even better. Passante.
Liara.
Is it Passante or Liara is in the commercial? I don't know. Either one.
Details.
Maybe all three of them. Maybe it's like a three thing. Who knows? It's
menage a passante.
Yeah, it's a perfume commercial, so why not, right? Anyway, let's talk about Kaje. What do we know about the Kaje? About the Kaje planet card. I feel like I'm a valley girl all of a sudden.
The Kaje planet card, it says, with 90% of its surface covered by a vast ocean known as the Encompassing, Kaje is permanently enveloped in a blanket of clouds created by the heat from its energetic white star. Beneath that cloud cover, the planet's land area consists solely of small islands. If you're a Star Wars fan and you're listening to this thinking, man, that sounds a lot like Kamino, well, it does. Kaje's atmosphere is perfect for life. While containing some traces of ammonia, it consists primarily of oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen, similar to that on Earth. Unfortunately, the climate has also proved too humid for the non-native Drell, who were evacuated there from their own dying homeworld by the Hanar 2 centuries earlier, and they have found it more tolerable to live in climate-controlled domed cities. Kaje is also dotted with Prothean ruins, which has shaped the religion and society of the Hanar. Mount Vasla, an underwater volcano, is at the heart of one of these largest Prothean ruins. The winners of religious events of the Hanar holiday of Nyahir, or First Cresting Bloom, are inscribed in bioluminescence on the sides of the mountain for a year afterward.
That's some long-lasting bioluminescent, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I mean, organic things that just sit there and glow for a year? That's crazy.
That's super cool, though. Yeah. I mean, that, I can imagine that being an enormous point of pride with the Hanar and the Drell, that if you win at this poetry slam, then you get a free year's worth of Passante Fantasy perfume, and you get your name on the side of that mountain.
Passante Fantasy perfume, slightly more human than is comfortable. That's the tagline.
The only place the Drell can live on Kaje is the dome city that, like they were talking about. It's called, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, it's Cidaria? Nidaria? It's C-N-I-D-A-R-I-A.
Cnidaria?
The biological family term for the family of animals that also includes jellyfish.
Oh, weird. So okay, so it's not just like a made-up word, it's an actual derived probably from Latin or something,
right? Yeah, they changed the word a little bit, but yeah, it's clearly from that. Anyway, that's the domed city that's floating on the water, and according to a Drell we later meet in the book Mass Effect Andromeda Annihilation, I think that's the novel, this Drell recalls it being a total crime-ridden hellhole.
Oh, wonderful.
And so it's not as utopic as the Citadel. It's a little bit more similar to Omega. It sounds like Sin City, the way that this Drell recalls it.
Mm-hmm. Cidaria is what we should call it.
Cidaria. There we go.
Oh. All right. Well, there's our planet card. This is fun. Let's get back to the rest of the show, though, because we've got more Liara to talk about. Here we go.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir.
Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So, Liara takes a dive into Kaje. Kaje, she goes for a big swim in a big, big ocean. Is that
Liara's
the next piece
big
of this?
Dip.
She's, yeah, she swims with the merman, the Tim the merman. So where does she go on Kaje?
Let's just dive in.
Let's just
so
dive
as
in.
She's she before she goes swimming, she's on the domed city. So, you know, Liara needs to breathe, and it's probably a good place, good a place as any to start looking for information on these Prothean ruins. But as you could have guessed, the Hanar that worship the Protheans, they're not a big fan of doling out information to just any alien who asks. Especially since we already know that their culture is a little bit private. You know, they have a soul name and a public-facing name. So this one Hanar tells Liara, look, that site is not open to the public. And you're better off basically going to a museum where we have some Prothean artifacts. And then she successfully bribes her way into accessing the ruins. She's promising this hefty contribution to the Cresting Bloom celebrations. You know, the ones that if you win, you get your name inscribed with bioluminescence. This is, again, evidence that Liara is very astute. She's very knowledgeable about almost every major alien civilization and their customs. And she uses that to her advantage in this information trading kind of deal.
Cool.
And okay. A Drell standing nearby, the Drell's name is Coyle, I think is how you say it. It's Q-U-O-Y-L-E. I would say Coyle.
Coyle.
Dan Quayle. So Dan Quayle
the Drell. Anybody under 30 is going to be like, who?
Dan Quayle promises to take her to the ruins. And and the two hop into a really cool version of the M44 Hammerhead. But not before Reagan has anything to say about it.
Okay. Where the two are you going?
Is the M44 Hammerhead spelled with an extra E at the end? I don't know if anyone's going to get that joke. Do you know about Dan Quayle misspelling potato?
Oh, no, I didn't.
I'm pretty sure it was Dan Quayle. Like, he misspelled potato and then, like, couldn't. This is how political news has changed over the decades. He misspelled
there he goes again.
Potato and was, like, the brunt of every joke from that point on. Lost tons of respect for misspelling potato. And yet, we live in a society today where, you know, political candidates do ridiculous things every day. And we're just like, yeah, it's fine.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, committing federal crimes.
Yeah. Anyway. So
how silly.
Yeah. So, okay. So the M44 Hammerhead. Dan Quayle
and Liara hop into the Hammerhead. And Reagan is the voice of the VI on the submarine.
Okay. All right.
No. So this is the interesting thing. They don't refer to it as the Hammerhead in the comic. But if you look at the artwork here, this is definitely the M44 Hammerhead. Like, it's the same exact design. I'm sure if you took a fine-tooth comb to it, you might be able to find some differences. But the similarities are beyond coincidental. And it's really interesting because this is now functioning as a submarine. So we're diving underwater to this ruin. And while they're talking, the two torpedoes are shot toward the Hammerhead. And again, this is interesting because apparently this is Dan Quayle's ship, yet we're told the Hammerhead was a Cerberus-designed prototype. So How did a random Drell on Kaje get a hold of a Cerberus prototype ship?
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's a little strange. Okay.
And again, this is not, I'm addressing this now because it's not like this is some detail that's hidden later in the comic. This is an address.
Yeah, it's not like this, like, is going somewhere. It's just a weird coincidence. I don't know.
The two torpedoes are shot from the ruin itself. Because apparently, like, of course, the Hanar have set up these defenses to guard the ruin. Why would you not? Not suspicious at all. What's hiding in the ruin? What's in the ruin? That's a Seven reference that I'm not sure anyone's going to get either.
Oh, God.
An N7 reference. Oh. So water starts flooding into the Hammerhead because they do get hit by these torpedoes, and half of it's been blown off. And Liara and Dan Quayle debate whether to... I'm just going to keep calling him Dan Quayle.
Yes.
Liara and Quayle debate whether to swim to these escape pods in the back because the thing's taking on water, like, really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And this is, like, you know, the perfect opportunity for Liara to be like, I got this. Let me just go Super Saiyan for a second. And she pulls off some superhero level biotics. She spawns a mass effect field, which looks like it encompasses the entire, like, Hammerhead.
Yeah.
And I suppose this keeps the water out long enough for Quayle to reboot the engines. And then they arrive at the ruins.
These panels actually look pretty cool. I mean, the art's still a little funny, but you know what the weirdest part about the art to me is the hard shadows on the faces. There's constantly these hard shadows on the faces, which is a little weird, but maybe they're just going for a darker vibe. I don't know.
I think they were trying to go for, like, dark intrigue, mysterious vibe with this, but it's also interesting that you mentioned the shadows because, as we just learned from Zach Scott, the cinematic designer, couple of episodes ago, that shadows were part of the hardest part of designing Mass Effect 2, mm-hmm. because they had they literally weren't, like, programming lighting shadows. They were making different colors on the face.
Right. Yeah. It's but yeah, everything's, like, backlit or side lit. It's all kind of interesting. But the water looks like the water and the biotics in this look like the people in their faces are the weirdest part of the art. Everything else looks really cool. So, I don't know. Take a look. Everybody who's listening at home, jump into our YouTube channel and take a look at some of these. All right. So what happens next? Like, there's, like, are there enemies at the ruins? Like, what's going on with, like, they're getting
there's
shot
enemies
at
the ruins.
Like, right. Okay.
So. Yeah. So of course, you know, there's enemies at the ruins, much like one of the levels in the video games. You know, they go from one catastrophe to combat.
Right. And like the trope of, like, oh, well, they have to have something to fight here. So let's just invent something for them to fight because game mechanics.
So the interesting thing here is that there's Cerberus. Cerberus is at the ruins, and the two of them get attacked by a Cerberus Phantom. The Phantoms are those ninja kind of Cerberus enemies with the katanas, and the Cerberus Phantom cuts Liara's phalanx pistol in half. So it's
oh no,
Liara might be screwed because she just, like, exhausted herself with all that biotics. But then, like, you know, a panel or two later, Liara easily kills the Phantom by biotically catapulting one of the broken pieces of the pistol through the Phantom's helmet.
Nice. That sounds cool.
Like, right in the face.
Yeah.
So she just propelled this piece of pistol at maybe, like, close to light speed.
Jeez. Like, she almost just nuked to the planet by moving a pistol too quickly through an atmosphere.
Probably not
created
that strong,
fusion.
But it was fast enough.
Right.
It was fast enough to break through the helmet and kill the Phantom. So Liara gets up, like, well, that was weird. And then remarks that open attacks like this and killing security guards who are already stationed on this, it's a weird thing for Cerberus to do. You know, these tactics aren't typically their style. They're usually more discreet. So if they're resorting to this kind of open warfare, then they must be desperate to keep her or anyone else from getting to this Prothean data, which of course raises the question, what is in this Prothean data?
Dun, dun,
well,
dun.
She keeps walking. By the way, Dan Quayle is wounded. Quayle is wounded. He's got slashed in the stomach. He's like, you go on ahead. I've seen this stuff so many times. I don't really care. So she goes on ahead. And she gets to the archives and she starts deciphering this data with her Omni tool, only to realize that what she wanted really isn't here. And the only treasure that is in the data is
friendship.
Friendship. It was the friendship she made with Dan Quayle.
Right.
And also an exclusive sample of Passante Fantasy.
Yes. Yes. Those are the real treasures.
A Prothean perfume. I cannot imagine. Would that be like, Would a Prothean perfume make you literally go into like a solipsism of memories?
Yeah, like, no, it's psychedelic for sure. Yes.
Your eyes glaze over and you're like, I'm in first grade again. I can smell the I can smell the scented stamp that my teacher put on my A+ paper.
This is the first time I smelled Passante in first grade when my teacher walked by and it wafted past my nostrils, also sending me to a further earlier memory of me as a toddler.
I'm in fifth grade. The power is out at my house. Ice is covering the trees and the whole town has been covered by a snowstorm. No, it's silent. There's nothing going on outside. My family and I must scavenge for wood so that we can keep the fireplace going.
The camera pans out the window and Tim the merman slides down the hill slowly
with wood
in slow motion. Okay, weird.
So she finds inside this Prothean ruin, she finds Prothean decryption keys. And these are going to be the way that they can decipher the data that's stored on other major Prothean ruins on other planets. And of course, the elusive man just pops up.
So he does hologram. He does show up outside the window, sliding down the hill.
He does. Yeah. He does. He doesn't have wood, though.
Did you ask?
Well, the hologram is doing him a disservice then. So he pops up on a hologram and he feeds her some bullshit about how, you know, oh, I didn't send that phantom after. You know what? The elusive man is Reagan in this circumstance.
Oh, man.
I didn't send that phantom after you, Liara. And then he says that his own people are becoming overzealous, you know, in the face of this Reaper threat. And he's trying to rein them in, blah, 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 blah. It's more bullcrap. Mm-hmm.
I don't actually have control of this. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, sure. So why is Cerberus even there, right? Like, Tim always buries the lead, right? Like, what's going on?
He does. And that's exactly what Liara asks him. Much like he tells us when we run into him in the Mars archives, he says to Liara, we're after the same thing you are, finding a way to stop the Reapers. And then he goes into a, you know, if we'd been working together instead of chasing leads in the dark, perhaps the bloodshed a moment ago could have been avoided.
Okay.
Don't forget that he only knows about this lead on Kage because he was spying on Liara this whole time. Mm-hmm. And he definitely did send the phantom after her. So this is a real Faustian deal with the devil kind of speak from a guy who knows he's on his back foot.
Right. But, you know, like, as with so many of the characters in these games and in the comics, this feels like a real person. Like, there is a personality disorder that the elusive man has that is very realistic, and people do this.
Malignant narcissism,
probably a few other things. But like, you see patterns of this on social media. Like today I happened to be on social media and I saw somebody doing something very kind of similar like this, but not nearly as serious because the world wasn't ending. But like these patterns show up. This is a real thing. Like, and he has no self-awareness to know that he's even like this.
You'd like to think he has no self-awareness, because if he does, he's definitely a sociopath.
Yeah, yeah. I think that he's the kind of person who's so buried in his justification for everything he does that nothing's out of bounds.
Oh, yeah. The ends justify the means for everything.
For him. Everything. Even to the point where, like, he's willing to re-explain and re-rationalize everything that's going on in his own head so that even he believes it. Now, you could say that has something to do with indoctrination or whatever, which in this case, probably. But it's also a very real human thing of, like, you lie to yourself enough and eventually you believe your own lies.
Yeah, wonder where else we've seen that. Liara has defeated the Phantom. You know, she's gained the ciphers at this ruin and she knows where to go next. And the elusive man knows that he needs to, like, throw a Hail Mary kind of mind game with her to get the upper hand. So Liara entertains this thought of working, quote unquote, together with the elusive man like he's proposed. And she says, sharing what we know could prove beneficial, though you'll understand if I'm a little cautious after having just had a Cerberus blade held to my throat.
Right.
Which is a great point.
Yeah.
So she's like, so why don't you go first? Upload all of the intel Cerberus has on the stopping of the Reapers to my Omni tool. And if I like what I see, I'll do the same in return.
Right, right, right. Is there a scene? I'm down to the last image. Just want to make sure we plug it in the right space.
I didn't screenshot this exact panel because visually it's not too interesting. But
okay, let me know in the final when the final panel comes up because I'll put it up on the screen.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Basically, this is a genius play right here by Liara. It really is. Her saying to him, you go first,
right?
Illustrate right. your goodwill,
right?
Is critical for her, even though she doesn't even believe it,
right? She's like, just putting him on the spot.
She's calling his bluff,
right? She wants him to prove that he's lying. So,
and I'm sorry, yeah. I was wrong. I did screenshot this. It's in that file I sent you. It's Mass Effect Homeworld Liara 6.
Yeah, okay. I thought maybe this was the one, so I just wanted to make sure. All right, so it's up on the screen now for people to look at.
And so she and the elusive man, you know, she says, you go first. If I like what I see, I'll do in the same return. And then she and the elusive man share this moment of silence, just staring at each other, until she says, I see. So either you aren't willing to share your information, or you don't have any.
Nice. Good call, Liara.
She is really the only person who can play the elusive man's game and beat him at it. Arya comes close, but in one of the novels, I think it's Mass Effect. I don't know if it's Retribution. It might be Retribution. It's the third of the Drew Karpyshyn novels. Mm-hmm. Arya comes close, but she's not really as skilled at seeing right through his game as Liara is.
Yeah.
And yet she beats him at it. Shepard does it a little bit. Shepard is more of a wrecking ball, no matter how you handle it with the elusive man.
Yeah, yeah. Liara is more tactful of the two. Yeah.
Liara takes his spin and his lies and uses the momentum and then propels it back at him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like mental Wing Chun, mm-hmm.
everybody,
what she's doing.
Everybody Wing Chun tonight. Liara's going to show you how.
Against Ronald Reagan.
okay.
So the elusive man snaps and says, don't play games with me, Liara. Meanwhile, she's like extracting the data she needs from the archives. Her back is turned to him. And then he launches into this sinister, masterfully sociopathic monologue trying to get inside her head. And he says, your shadow broker routine has been amusing and not without its benefits. But don't think for a second that you're in full control. And there it is, that concept again of the control with the elusive man. There he goes again. That's another Reagan reference for those who don't know. There he goes again. Your predecessor was a blunt instrument, but he understood the power of fear. He knew how to keep his operatives in line. The black markets are rumbling. The shadow broker's slipping, they're saying, going soft. The shadow broker's slipping, they're saying, all the smartest people are saying.
Oh, jeez. He's
going soft.
This is these
how many
impressions
knives are
just...
being sharpened?
Oh, no.
How many knives are being sharpened in the dark, do you think, while the shadow broker is going soft? How much time do you have left? They're saying it all, everybody's saying it, that we're weak.
Jeez.
I mean, come on.
Oh, no.
When the glove fits. And then the elusive man wraps it up by saying, you need me. And yeah. Liara counters, turns around again, points out the obvious.
Right. And, yeah.
And yet here you are trying right. to make a deal with me.
Right.
And you're saying that I right. need you.
Come on. It sounds like everything you're saying is the opposite of the way things actually are. Weird. Weird. Huh. Huh.
Wow.
Huh.
You are so full of crap.
So full of BS. Huh.
Yeah.
And then projecting a little bit. Yeah.
She challenges him and says, next time you send someone to kill me, it better be an army.
Nice. Nice.
And then she hangs up on him. Then she regroups with Dan Quayle and calls Admiral Hackett, telling him, we didn't get what we wanted, you know, but we have a lead on something that could help turn the tide. But I need you to pull some strings so that I can get access to a top secret facility, drum roll please, on Mars.
Mars? We just talked about Mars. Yeah.
On Mars. So this is really interesting because the last thing that she said to him before Liara runs into him on Mars is, next time you send someone to kill me, it better be an army. And what do we run into on Mars? We run into a Cerberus army.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. This is always fun to go through these comics and see how all this stuff pieces together, kind of fills in the gaps. So that's very cool.
I have my own conspiracy theory, too, about Dan Quayle here.
Okay.
Quayle had this M44 Hammerhead, which is only a Cerberus prototype.
Right.
And Cerberus just so happens to be there when they get there.
Right.
And the Phantom only goes after Liara. It nicks him a little bit, but it doesn't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me a lot like Quayle was a Cerberus plant.
Right. Or someone who just got paid and it was basically like, here, we'll give you a ship for this information or whatever.
He just so happened to be around when Liara was trying to bribe the Hanar, right? And then he said, I can help.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe so. It's not explicitly called out, though, so.
Yeah, it's not.
It's kind of fun to plant that stuff in just for the what if, right? Like, oh, maybe he was.
I think there were little crumbs left, definitely on purpose. But yeah, it's not confirmed. And that leads us directly to where we meet Liara on Mars in Mass Effect 3.
So you're saying Dan Quayle was working with Reagan?
The whole time.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this Saturday live stream and recording. This episode will be up on its usual time. It's part of why we buffer time before things get dropped anyway. But thanks for being here in the live chat. And Sam, you got anything else you want to share before we head out?
Yeah, you know, I'm continuing my personal canon playthrough. I'm in Mass Effect 3, rediscovering my love of that game and all the many wonderful mods I've downloaded. So I'm actually streaming that today on the same day that we're recording this on Twitch. I'll be live, actually, in just a couple of hours. But if you want to drop me a follow on Twitch, you'll see that notification when I go live. That will be in just a couple of hours. And if you're not going to catch this stream, I am streaming in the middle of the week. I've been doing Fallout streams. I had to fix some mods with my Fallout, so I didn't do it last week, but I'm going to keep doing it. And that's usually Tuesdays or Wednesdays I'm doing that, and then Saturdays live with Mass Effect.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, go check out Sam's stream. Also, if you're looking for other content, other podcasts or other lore shows about other games, some of the ones that I do and a bunch of other people do, head over to robotsradio.net, find a bunch of links there. And thanks for hanging out, everybody. We'll be back next week with another regular episode. And until then, have a wonderful week and, you know, try to turn things back around on Tim when he tries to convince you everything that you know is a lie. Because that's the only way to do it. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.